Dr. Lin is our first speaker. He is an assistant professor at the University of Massachusetts Medical School in Family Medicine and Community Health, and also a research scientist at the UMass Center for Health Policy and Research.
Thank you, Ben, and thank you everyone for being here, and hope you enjoy the conference as well as the city. A little bit cold these days, but hope you enjoy the view in the city here. So today I'm going to talk about the factor associated with the frequent hospitalization and the emergency room visit for the homeless population. And this study is, I know kind of many studies have examine this factor associated with these acute service use. But however, in our study, in this research, we have a very unique perspective because through the great effort of the Boston Healthcare for Homeless Program, and actually we cover probably the population they serve, cover by 40% of the homeless individual in Massachusetts, and almost 80% of their patients have the Medicaid coverage here. So actually, most of the articles talking about homeless individuals, we tend to have a large proportion of them have no health insurance at all. And this time, we do have very high kind of almost, this we focus on people with Medicaid coverage. And we also link the program data with the Medicaid data together. So we can see the people's healthcare utilization across various healthcare settings as well as the entire healthcare system under the Medicaid here. So it's very unique, and I think it's going to provide additional information thinking about the upcoming Medicaid expansion in 2014. When people, when state is able to implement the Medicaid expansion, hope everybody do that. And many of these homeless individuals, you know, will have health insurance coverage, or they will qualify for health insurance coverage. So this provides some information for state and provider and policymaker to think ahead, to plan and get prepared for what they will see when these population come into their health insurance coverage here. Okay, first of all, I need to declare I have no any conflict of interest in terms of any financial relationship that's required by the conference here. So first of all, I'd like to introduce my colleagues here. Robin Clark, Jen Yin Zhang, and Beth O'Connell is with the Center for Health Policy and Research. And we have a collaborator, Monica Burrell and Bob Top. And Monica is right here, who is the Chief Medical Director of the Boston Healthcare for Homeless Program. And this is a great collaboration on both sides here. And we also want to acknowledge the Dr. Linda Weinreber's connect with both together and facilitate this research as well as the earlier comments in our previous presentation here. So for homeless individuals, there are significant barriers in terms of their to getting the appropriate care. Most likely, the healthcare might not be their top priority in their daily life. They might think in shelter, food as the first priority. Healthcare always in the last minute when they something getting bad and something very acute, or maybe they don't even notice their own healthcare problem until some other people bring them to the emergency room or hospitals. And however, the many studies have shown there are multiple comorbidities, ranging from physical illness to behavioral health disorder, including both mental illness and substance use disorders. And they also kind of use the emergency room a lot. It becomes their kind of quote-unquote kind of usual regular source of care, rather than kind of in the regular commercial insured population. They might go to the primary care doctors. So, however, recently, starting from Medicaid expansion in 2014, they seem to have opportunities for us to help this population for them to gain access to health care once they are covered in the state's Medicaid programs there. And also, they are in the Affordable Care Act. There are several mandates there or options there for states and providers to utilize, for example, the health home options, which is intended to integrate primary care and behavioral health care. So state can submit a state amendment to allow provider a much more flexible way of delivering this care here. And also in the several other innovations like accountable care organization, they emphasize the care coordination and care management here. And this is very important for this population as they have multiple comorbidities here. So. However, there's still some question there in the field because most of the study have documented the disease burden based on a survey, based on the individual clinical, individual programs, the medical record. And however, this population, they might not come to the one single clinic at all. They might go to several places. They might go to emergency room, they might go to hospital, and this record might not be flowed back to the clinic they normally visit there. So this and the survey always kind of have some recording bias there, and also kind of we don't know how detailed you can go in there. For example, the survey might only ask, okay, if you have any mental illness problem, but without any specifications there. Okay, and also we have little information on the healthcare utilization expenditure across the entire healthcare system. We probably know a good knowledge in terms of from the one clinic and the province view there, but they use the system service across the entire system. So that's why kind of this our research is trying to address these questions here. So. Actually, this is probably the second study we have been doing. The first one is a descriptive analysis, describe the population, the patient profile, the disease profile, and the basic healthcare utilization expenditure, which is in, I think probably next week, next month, in the upcoming, this month? December, okay, thank you. Yeah, in December's issue, the American Journal of Public Health, we will have a very detailed statistics about this there. So in this research today, I'm going to present our second study. We try to identify factors associated with frequent hospitalization and ED visit in this population. So this will help state to developing the more effective care models to take care of this population. And as I mentioned earlier, this also provides very unique perspective on how these people are going to use the health care system when they have health insurance. So for the method, we merge both the Boston Health Care for Homeless Programs data and the Medicaid claim data together. So from the Boston Health Care for Homeless Programs data, we have much reliable information on people's racial and ethnicity, and also we know their housing status, which is normally we cannot get from the claims data there. However, from the claim data side, we know where these people receive their services across the entire the healthcare system. And the dependent variable we have two dependent variables. One is the number of ED visits, and the other one is the number of hospitalization. And in most of the health service research study, people might start with just kind of single yes or no, whether you have any ED visit or any hospitalization. And as the data I'm going to show you later, you will see this might not be a norm in this population anymore. It's not a yes or no question. It's more kind of why they have much higher number of the higher number of hospitalization or ED visits. So that's why we use the number of these events as a dependent variable instead of yes or no. And the independent variable include the most of the demographic characteristics, their housing status, and the disease groups here. And the disease group, we have probably, 10 selected physical conditions, mixed combination of infectious disease like HIV, AIDS, hepatitis C, to some chronic conditions. People normally, many people, they have like asthma and hypertension. Yeah. And on the mental illness and substance use disorder side, we really go into the detail to record their severe and persistent mental illness, other form of mental illness, and a combination with the presence of the substance use disorders. And for the statistical analysis here, because the dependent variables are the count data, which count the number of the events there, and it's now following the regular normal distribution, so we need to use the negative binomial regression. The reason we use negative binomial regression instead of so-called Poisson regression is because we see the wide variation of the event. In other way, in the statistical jargon, it's kind of the large standard variation, which causes to the over dispersion here. So we use this model to do that. Okay. So as I mentioned earlier, next month you will see much more detailed statistics about this population. But here, so I just going through pretty quickly, give you some background about the study population we include in this analysis. So basically, we identified about 6,500 Boston Healthcare for homeless patients with Medicaid coverage. And remember I mentioned earlier, this program has been a central a force in taking care of this population. They cover 40% of the homeless individual in Massachusetts, and 80% of their patients have Medicare or Medicaid coverage here. So even we are talking about the patient in this program per se, but I have to say, even though it's not fully population-based study, but in some way this could a very good reflection on the homeless individual in the state here. And the average age is 46, and the dominant proportion of people is in the 25 to 64. 71% are male, and more than half had a disability determined by the Social Security Administration or the state disability determination here. So this is not a clinical disability per se. This is more for the administrative purpose. Yeah. But still, you can see probably 60% of them had some kind of disability. And over a quarter were also dually eligible for Medicare and Medicaid here. And with the rich data from Boston Healthcare for Homeless Program, we used their last known address in calendar year 2010. So about 70% of them are not housed. This including people live on the street, live in the emergency shelter, or in the any kind of temporary or transitional housing there. Okay. However, we also have about 20% of them living in some kind of housing arrangement, you know, without support services here. And I don't think I need to explain quite why there's a house the people in the homeless individual population in this audience here. So because they are supporting housing here, because I present to the other audience, they always come up with this question about why there's a house the homeless individual here. But I don't think I need to explain here. Okay. This is their disease profile. Okay, I think you all know they have substantial disease burden here, but this is the first time we use the claim data to document the prevalence of these diseases here. However, before I go into these statistics, I have to say this probably is still underreported because they need to come into the healthcare system to receive services, and doctor also need to write down the diagnosis so we can analyze to come up with these numbers. So potentially, these are still underreported here. So even with underreported prevalence, 70% of them have mental illness, any type of mental illness. 60% have substance use disorders. And also, almost half of them have a co-occurring mental illness and substance use disorders here. Right. And the three leading selective physical conditions in our research we found is hypertension, asthma or COPD, and hepatitis C here. And so in addition to individual disease, we also calculate so-called overall disease burden by using a DSCG score. So the mean of this population score is almost about 4. So that means kind of the overall disease burden is 4 times higher than the general Medicaid population. So you think about the general Medicaid population is 1 in terms of the disease burden. Homeless individual is 4 times higher. Okay, and But we also need to know for the Medicare population, they already have much, much higher disease burden than the regular commercial insured population. So that's kind of a very staggering figures here. So for the healthcare utilization, on average, annual average, they have at least one hospitalization per year. Okay. And 12% of them had three or more hospitalizations in a year. And for ED visits, they average four ED visits in a year. And another 40% had three or more ED visits in a year. So it's very, very kind of high usage in this population. And also half of these hospitalizations and one third of ED visits were attributable to the behavioral health disorders. Their annual expenditure is about $23,000, and one third of them were for the behavioral health services. And the distribution, because they have high hospitalization and the ED visit, so 40% of the expenditure were attributable to hospitalization, and 11% is for ED visit. So here, after we control for the demographics, housing status, and here is the result here, and we report the results using the so-called instance rate ratio. So you can think about if the take this more the ratio comparing the instance of the event of the population here to the reference group here. So this slide showing the incidence ratio for when we compare to people without mental illness and substance use disorders here. So for people with co-occurring mental illness and substance use disorders, they have very, very high rates of hospitalization and ED visits, especially for people with schizophrenia and substance use disorders. They have 50 times higher of hospitalization rate and 8 times higher of ED visits compared to the people without mental illness and substance use disorders. Okay. And in addition to people with co-occurring mental illness and substance use disorders, people with schizophrenia without SUD and people with substance use disorder without mental illness, they also have very, very high rates of hospitalization and substance use disorders. And for selected physical conditions, they have much more moderate impact here once we include all these variables together. We separate people's disease into the mental illness, substance use disorder, and physical condition here. So, and adjust for housing status and demographics. So, they kind of slightly moderate impacts on the hospitalization and EDV compared to the mental illness and the substance use disorder here. So, you can see they probably range from probably 1.5 to probably 2 times higher than the comparison between people without these selected physical conditions here. And for people living on the street or in shelter, they have probably 1.5 to 2 times higher hospitalization and ED visit compared to people with some housing arrangement here. In combination of these two slides here, that show us here, there is a need to better integrate behavioral health care into the health care delivery for this population, and as well as some kind of housing support will help reduce the disease utilization here. So in summary, even this population already have Medicaid coverage, that resolved partial of the problems in the access to care. Still, there's lots of the issues that we still need to work to resolve them. And the other thing is kind of people always think about, okay, if we provide people health insurance, everything should be resolved. It's not that straightforward, like people always say, the shortest distance between two points never be a straight line here. So, but we have to say access to care, resolving this health insurance coverage is always the first step. Once we resolve that, we think about, for this population, Okay, we anticipate once they have health insurance coverage, we would like to reduce their hospitalization, ED visits, these kind of considered more urgent acute services. Okay, we want to kind of move them more toward to the health maintenance and the preventive care arena once they have health insurance coverage. However, we need to recognize that I showed you before, they have very, very high disease burden and a very, very high prevalence of the mental illness and substance use disorders. So, and in many times, this disease kind of, it's kind of, they have more the crisis-driven utilizations. And this kind of pattern can persist even they have health insurance coverage for these conditions. So that's kind of the key here. We resolve the issues on access to care, but we also look at the disease profile and the social needs and medical needs for this population and think about what's the next step. What can we do next after we provide health insurance coverage to them? And so here kind of the efforts in service integration and target individuals. For example, we show earlier people with co-occurring mental illness and substance use disorders and people without housing. And so these are when kind of we have to think about we probably cannot kind of cure all people at once. So when we have the budget restraint and how are we going to become a tiered approach, how are we going to identify the population to help first, and then and after that we can go layer down to the more other people's layer. Okay, so I think two more slides. Okay, thank you. So definitely, there is some limitation to words of noting. First, this is a cross-sectional study using the calendar year 2010 data. And we did not follow people all the time, so we don't know how long people has been in homeless, has been homeless, and also the reason become homeless. And also this focus on Boston Healthcare for Homeless Programs patients. So there is a question about the generalizability to the other parts of state as well as to the nation. But as I mentioned earlier, they did a good job and covered 40% of the homeless individual lives in Massachusetts. And so that is very, very good representativeness of this homeless individual there. And however, in Massachusetts, there have been several healthcare reform in recent years, starting from the patient-centered medical home, and primary care payment reform, and this year we also have a dual eligible demonstration program, and they are working on submitting a health home option for the approval. So this potentially going to change this healthcare utilization pattern, healthcare deliveries in certain way, but we don't know yet. So even we provide the baseline in calendar year 2010, we hope in the future with these efforts, things might have been changed there. So the implication is here. I think this is a good, very, very good opportunity in the coming years. In addition to the Medicare expansions next year, there are all state can leverage the health home options, and also the ACA emphasizes care coordination and the care management through different regulations there. So I think the provider have a good opportunity to work closely with the state. I know this is a lot of work to do there, but this is an opportunity that we should not overlook. Kind of think about these ACA provisions here and how can we propose to stay and how to change the delivery system as well as the healthcare payment systems here. Yeah. And to allow many of the providers here the more flexible options to provide a more kind of a rich set of the services here, and even go beyond the medical care barrier and in collaborating with other state agencies, providing the housing and other social support. I think that's critical to integrate both the medical care and the social resources together for this population. And I think that's conclude the presentation. Thank you. Thank you.
questions?
Yes.
Thanks for a nice talk and really great data. So I think your data has shown that sicker people get hospitalized more and use the emergency department more. Mm-hmm. And while I think we'd like to, you know, view the goal of eliminating hospitalizations in emergency department use as a good one, it's probably not realistic. And there may be many cases where hospitalization or ED use was very appropriate to their needs. So I'm wondering if you looked at perhaps preventable hospitalizations for ambulatory sensitive conditions or ambulatory sensitive emergency department visits, because those are the things that I see as really being able to move the mark on for a very ill population. Mm-hmm. And the second question is, did you look at discontinuity in Medicaid coverage as a predictor of use? For instance, a lot of our patients, I work with Healthcare for Homeless, a lot of our patients cycle in and out of Medicaid coverage. Did that have any bearing on their utilization patterns?
Thank you. Those are two great questions. And I'll try to answer the simpler question first. The second question here. Yes, the second question about whether we take into account the discontinuity of Medicaid coverage in this analysis. Yes, we did. We include the length of the Medicaid enrollment days in our model, in the multivariate model. And actually, I don't have the numbers with me or in my computer here. I think they have very, they probably 10 to 11 months of coverage of Medicaid in this population, very, very high. I think that maybe kind of people in other states, other programs, maybe you can talk to Monica later about the outreach efforts and how to get people get enrolled in the Medicaid programs there. Okay. And the first question about whether we look into the or separate the hospitalization and EDVs into the so-called preventable events or the ambulatory care-sensitive conditions there. We haven't done that. That's a very good question because that is another area that we are thinking is more the quality of so-called quality of care on this population, because we need to think about this. The regular quality of care process measure might not be applicable to this population. That's my own view. I don't know if people agree with me or not. And lots of people, lots of commercial plans use so-called HEDIS standard measure there, but it might not be fully applicable to this population here. And however, we did look at the diagnosis of ED visits and the hospitalizations there, and many of them are kind of alcohol or drug-related ED visits there. And I don't have a number with me, but we see the high percentage of that. So yes, I think that's the next step. We try to separate the hospitalization and the ED visits, which are considered preventable, or we think theoretically, if they have good primary care, they should be won't have to go to a hospital or ED visit for these conditions there. However, we also notice there are many ED visits related with alcohol-related problems.